Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline starts now.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. I'm Dr. Drew in the studio tonight, none other than our dear, dear, dear friend, Danny Bonaducci.
Do I get a deer for every time I've been here, your dear friend?
It's going to have to be many, many more deers, but I don't have to really do any more intro for you because you've been in enough that our listeners know exactly who you are, what you're doing right now, except they don't know that you're currently doing, can I announce this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, currently filming season two of Breaking Bonaducci. How's that going?
Oh, I went crazy again. It's such a bummer because I didn't get to see even a second of season one.
Hold on a second. You just tossed that off. Like, yeah, I became a nut job. Anyway.
I went completely insane, man.
What happened?
I don't remember exactly. It's a thing I'm, like, dealing with because I went into two full-blown rages, and I don't remember, like, what happened at all. And I was stone-cold sober.
This is in this on camera?
Yeah. So you I don't know how bad they're going to be.
I've got a couple of patients that do that, and they do that usually when they're in a pretty manic-y state.
Yeah, I was killing people, apparently. And firing people that I have no ability. I fired the head of VH1. That's it, man. You're fired. Except I get madder than that. I mean, you can barely understand me. It's like inaudible. It's like, what?
Here's the deal, though. You got to get that taken care of. Because the problem is people go out like that because you don't know what the hell you're doing. It's amazing you didn't go out.
I did not go out. But you know what's funny? I think I'm getting, and this is probably the time to be more careful, I really believe I'm getting a handle on this.
On addiction?
I don't know on addiction, on my personal well-being. I don't think I've been given any special knowledge on addiction. But my personal well-being seems to be much more manageable, and therefore my life and the people that... Because I used to say to people, I've never had a drug problem. It's just everybody I liked had a serious drug problem. Because I was taking drugs, and you had a problem.
Well, let me understand this. I'm very intrigued, Danny, that you feel like you've got a control or sort of a grip on wanting to get well?
No, I think, believe it or not, this sounds really odd, but I think I've got a bit of a grip on my life and how to behave appropriately. Because here's what happened, is in just all at the same moment, I found out, and this was really a surprise, I found out there was a limit to what people would take from me. And I never thought there was before. Gretchen.
Oh, you mean Gretchen.
But also people, the doctor from my TV show quit his job and everybody like, just that's it. And I mean, the show was folding purely over my behavior. And the show and my wife, and not in that order, are two of the most, and my kids are the most important things in my life. And they were all going away simultaneously.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've done a great deal of reflecting. Go ahead.
But to what extent was that under your volitional control? Were you not following directions or something? Or was it, you know what I mean? Did you contribute to you getting into that state?
You know what? To be honest with you, I would assume I always contribute to being in that state. Whenever you know, I'm not a violent man. I mean, nobody that wasn't being stupid ever got hurt from me.
Could this be related to the head injury from the motocycle?
I don't know about that.
Talk about that.
I broke both my arms, my nose, my teeth were starting to spread.
Helmet filled with Danny's blood is available on eBay or probably sold now.
My helmet split and the face part came off and it was all full of blood. And then my wife says, you know that face mask of yours is on eBay. But I'll give you an idea how bad it is. I come home from the hospital and I've had really like major surgery on my left arm. My right wrist is broken. My nose is broken. Blood still caked to me. And I get home, and Gretchen says, listen, if you want to kill yourself, just stay away from my children. And I thought, what kind of reaction is that to me being just completely a broken man? And then I thought, you know what? It's just more mayhem. Even if it's unintentional, even if it's not my fault, even though I'm in agony, she just doesn't want to hear one more siren in her lifetime because she's heard half a dozen.
That's good. That's a little healthy on her part, right?
Yeah, she's really healthy. I'm a train wreck. They said when advertising my TV show, they cut, like, people commenting on my TV show, and they said, one girl goes, Breaking Bonaducci, the guy's a train wreck. And the other guy says, and they're not in the same room, it's editing, they said, duh, Breaking Bonaducci, the guy's a car crash. And the last guy goes, Bonaducci, he's a train wreck into a car crash with a baby on fire. Yeah, it went out there pretty far, Drew.
And they haven't seen season two yet.
Season two, I don't think season two is as violent as season one, but it's just, I think it's spookier, only because I don't really remember too much about it.
I have to tell you, I have grave concerns about that head injury contributing to this. And you see a psychiatrist, yes?
Season one, I think tomorrow, if not on Friday.
Are you seeing him or her regularly?
Him, and yes, but this is not my doing. This is a mandate from VH1.
Had you been seeing this person regularly?
Only when my prescriptions ran out.
Oh, dude. That's part of the problem there.
Who sees a doctor when you're before your prescription? You know, I don't even have a real doctor. I go to the emergency room or I'm not sick.
Oh, Danny.
I don't have a real doctor. I just go, like, if I'm dying on my own, I go to urgent care. And if I've been hit by a car, an ambulance picks me up.
If you wonder how codependent I am, I'm feeling Gretchen's pain.
Everybody does. You picked the right horse.
Oh, my God. Well, very interesting. I can't wait to see the footage. I think.
Tell me
I think,
what it's like, because I ain't think, watching.
But I'm glad you're seeing the psychiatrist. But let me just throw it, as though you were a caller, throw my two cents in.
Please do, sir.
Please see that person on a regular basis. Because as you're finding out, it's hard to be objective about these states you get into.
Right.
And the psychiatrist can monitor that and adjust the medicines and keep you from getting into those fugue states where you do violent things.
Well, I don't know. I've never done anything actually violent to anyone. What happens is I get
scared. As far as you know, you don't even remember what the hell happened.
Dude, you have no idea how many times I've been
scared
seen
the ass out of people.
Oh, I didn't scare them. Actually, they had this whole big thing about my personal boundaries and we feel unsafe and we need to feel physical safe, blah, blah, blah. I'm going, God, you guys are punks, man. Nobody got hurt. Shut up. Well, but I had signs and stuff.
But here's the deal. I think to focus on psychological when you get a state like that is putting the cart way ahead of the horse. That's something biological triggered put you into those states, and they weren't being monitored properly. And you wouldn't have to have those psychology discussions, though they're not that they're wrong. But but they're not going to do much good when you're flipping out and your brain's in a seizure state, basically.
Right.
I mean, that's basically what happens. All right,
let's
take some calls.
That's pretty much what happened. All right, good idea.
Yeah, yeah. All right, here we go. This is, very nice. Megan. I'm using the cursor instead of the buttons.
Oh, right.
Megan, what's up?
Megan.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey there. You're on with Danny Bonaducci.
And Dr. Drew.
Yeah, I know. I've been listening to that, dude.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah, very, actually. But I have a question. My husband and I have been together for several years, and we have recently, he started in the middle of the night, like, waking me up. Stimulating me, and then we proceed to have intercourse, and I have like the best orgasm ever. But like when I'm in a waking state, when it's initiated, I cannot have any type of orgasm. And I'm just curious if there's any way to like switch that around would be super nice. So
I got great advice for you. Take sleeping pills. Be asleep all the time. Only be awake when you're going. That's what I do. A couple of Valium and boom, let's go.
That would be a good idea, except I have two kids, so that wouldn't work out too well.
That's trouble. Go ahead, Doc. Give us a reasonable
ruin the party, Danny. Ruin the party. So, Megan, it makes sense in terms of the fact that people are in a different biological state when they're sleeping. And that's how people are able to have spontaneous orgasms, wet dreams when they're sleeping. Yeah. That's because they're in a sort of a more receptive state. And you sort of are probably half awake when you get going, and it never fully awakens, fully arouses you into an awake state. And for whatever reason, your orgasmic biology works better then. It's like you're having half a wet dream.
Is it a good orgasm? Is it good sex?
I like that kind of wet dream because it's actually happening.
No, it's like half. It's a wet dream with stimulation, basically. So you're in that state where you're more receptive to orgasmic function because you're sleeping. Because, again, think about it. When you're asleep and have a wet dream, you're having no stimulation, yet you still have an orgasm. So you're very prone to orgasmic function in sleep.
So you're more curious as to why this is happening rather than complaining.
She wants to make it happen during the day.
Right.
How come we can't make it happen?
I want to be able to, like, when it initiates, when I'm awake. I mean, that would be nice where it doesn't feel like I'm waking up and it's almost over.
Dr. Drew, I feel I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. Never. Don't worry about it. No, I think it's just that she wanted to have this experience when she was awake, but you really can't. You can kind of develop it. You know what I mean? You can sort of move more towards being awake at night, but I suspect you'll lose some of the orgasmic function if you do. So, what is he? Is he doing oral sex or intercourse? What are we doing here?
Basically just rubbing. Just stimulating.
Just manually stimulating him.
Yeah.
And he can't do that. What?
But then when I'm awake, the only way I can have an orgasm that way is if we use toys involved. Like, I have to have some type of, like, vibrator that both of us...
Megan, can I tell you something? Megan, You're the coolest girl in the world, okay? Just chill. Your husband gets to do the deed while you're snoozing and can't hassle him about it, and then you break out the party favors. You rock.
I was actually starting to get a little angry. I was like, come on, man. Like, you've got problems. Relax. You're fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
I orgasm too much when I sleep. I use toys during the day. It's like, come on. All right, here we go. This is Alan. What's up, Alan?
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Dr. Drew and Danny.
Hey, Alan.
So I just got diagnosed with type 2 herpes.
Yeah.
What do you mean you were diagnosed with
it? I took the blood test. I went to Planned Parenthood and got the blood test. But I've never had any symptoms whatsoever. Okay.
I put very little faith in those blood tests.
That's what I was thinking.
Those blood tests can really only... The accuracy of the blood test for herpes is very highly dependent on the clinical circumstances, meaning the probability of you having the virus.
Right.
It's only really confirmatory when there's high levels of clinical suspicion.
Got it.
If you had high suspicion and got a negative... That could be helpful, too.
Right.
If you have high suspicion and a positive, well, it just helps you say that's what it is. Really, the only way to confirm herpes is with a viral culture.
Got it.
Or a really pissed off girl.
Right.
That confirms it, too.
And then
she shows up on your door with a blister and smacks you in the head. You know you've got it.
Basically, she's the viral culture medium, you see?
It's
still a viral culture.
And then second question. Well, so I'll take it that I might not have it. But let's just say I even did. In the future, what would be the ethics? When do I have to tell someone I have it? You know what I'm saying?
I've got some actual experience here.
I was just going to say, thank God you called tonight with Danny Bonaducci here to discuss
ethics.
I love
Danny.
Well,
thank God.
To my great pleasure, I get to say, A, I don't have them.
Congratulations.
B, a couple, I was busy before I got married, and allegedly after, but I'm so not copping to that, Gretch. But anyway, two or three of my girlfriends...
You can't remember. You were in a fugue state. You can't remember what the hell you're doing.
If I did, it was a very long time ago. Anyway, two or three of my girlfriends have had herpes, and with two out of the three, we did not use protection. They had blatant symptoms, and when they had them, we didn't have sex.
Wow.
But, and I never caught them, ever. I mean, I've been tested, because I could be... We always heard that I could be like a carrier or something.
Yes.
Right. Gretchen got tested, and I got tested, and I don't, in fact, have them.
Man.
But there are people who can carry them.
This is, Danny, how you survive motorcycle accidents and the life you lead.
Oh, no, I wear a helmet when I have sex.
And lots of drugs.
I'm just saying, every bullet you dodge, and this is another dodged bullet.
Because it is.
Yeah, because this
Although
could
the busted been, arms and nose don't feel like I dodged anything. If your point is I'm not dead.
You're not dead.
Well, then that goes on a list of things I'm not dead about.
You're not dead, right, and you don't have herpes.
Right.
Each of those, these are bullet dodging talents.
Let's just go down the list of diseases I don't have and everybody clap. Of course, I don't have that either.
Danny, do you have rectal gonorrhea or not?
I have no gonorrhea of any kind.
Oh, good.
I'm gonorrhea free.
All right, Alan. You get put on hold for that one.
Sorry, Alan.
Where'd he go? How come I can't get him on hold? Anderson, help me out
here.
I
think
he's gone. Okay. Is he on hold according to...
hold.
There it is. Okay. All right, let's take another call here. This is Roy.
Hello?
Roy.
Hey, Roy, what's happening? You're on with Danny Bonaducci.
And Dr.
What's
Drew.
What's up? I have a question for y'all.
Okay.
Is this Roy the chick?
No.
I'm seeing this girl, and her name's Sarah, and her mom, like, thinks I'm too old for her, and her stepdad is, like, super genius, smart, and he really hates me.
Wow. Are you a girl, Roy?
I'm a dude.
No, I'm sorry. You have very, what can I say now, girlish voice.
I'm like, no, I'm just...
Virgin?
Virgin? Oh, yeah.
Wow. So your girlfriend's mother and who hates you?
Stepdad.
Her mom don't hate me. She just thinks I'm too old for her. And her stepdad hates me.
Obviously, how old are you? How old's the girl?
Right.
She's 14.
Oh, and is this real?
Wait, and you're 17?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're too old. I agree with mom. And the stepdad hates you because you're too old?
No, he just hates me because for some odd reason he thinks I'm a drug dealer.
Are you a drug dealer?
No.
Do you look like
I don't recognize your voice.
He's in North Carolina. It's one you missed.
Right.
Do you look like one?
Yeah, I wear like a lot of black and stuff.
All right, so you're giving the parents every reason not to like you. You dress differently. You probably got a little attitude. You're too old, and then you seem unable to empathize with the situation your girlfriend is in.
Oh,
you're just a dismissive. Roy, come on.
This may sound silly, but how does she dress? Does she dress like you, or does she dress like a little girl? it's Roy Horn, and he's being attacked by a lion.
Oh, man, Roy.
Oh, that's my friend being a dumbass.
Well, all right, Roy. Yeah. We're going to put him on hold, too.
You should be allowed to do drugs in North Carolina because you can't get out of North Carolina.
Why not?
Just if you could, Roy would.
All right, now here's a challenging call. This is Josh. He is 13.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah, well, wait till you hear the issue. I can't get it to pot up. Would you put up line 5 for me, Anderson? Josh?
Josh?
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, what's happening, buddy?
Hey, how are you?
We're good.
Concerned already.
Yeah. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I look at women having sex with animals on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if that could, like, lead to anything else or if it can mean anything or something.
Who's going to start there, Doc?
What?
Go ahead.
Doc, you want me to go? Okay, here's the thing.
Yeah, first, the veracity of this call is in question. Josh does not sound to me like a bestiality guy.
No, he sounded like he'd been put up to it, but he didn't at first because there are, and again, this is odd, and this is not my choice. I've never seen, that's not true. At my home video, my home computer has never seen internet porn because I just don't know how to do it. I've seen it at the office. People have shown it to me, but I don't know how to get there. But while they were showing it to me, they showed me one of those, and I found no sexual attraction to it at all, but I would think, a 13-year-old boy or anybody else would be curious to see it once or twice. What is it? Is it crazy? Is it real?
Right.
So if he's just looking at it, I'm not, you know, that concerned, although he's only 13. But
or think about 13-year-old guys would start to try to impress their buddies. Look what I saw.
That's the thing. And I do think, believe it or not, because I fought this fight and lost, I do believe that staring at porn, especially at 13, especially bestiality, can, in fact, lead to very serious trouble.
You know, I have to agree with you. It's just to stand back and pretend you were like an anthropologist from Mars. You're like a Martian. You arrived on this planet, and you said, well, we take these primates, we take chimpanzees, and we show them stimulating images, and they start getting all excited and behaving strangely and beating each other up. You know, something in that order. Would it surprise you as the anthropologist from Mars that when you showed young, developing human primates very evocative and sort of overwhelming images, that it would affect the trajectory of their development? You know, it would affect how their brain develops.
I wouldn't be nearly surprised as meeting a Martian anthropologist.
That would be surprising. More surprising.
That would be surprising. But no, I see your point exactly. And I think what will happen is, let's go back to the chimp analogy. The chimps, after a while, will stop getting excited by the same information.
And
it will take more and more stimulus of further and further they have to go to like get them back to that original arousal. It's a lot like sexual crack.
You're absolutely right. There is evidence that people, not everybody, but some people get in sort of a phase where in order to feel aroused, in order to feel sexual, they have to keep upping the ante. It has to be more arousing, more crazy, more goofy. And then the typical internet porn addict, for instance, leaves the internet and goes out into the real world and starts acting this stuff out, too.
Absolutely.
So it's...
If I couldn't orgasm from normal stuff, which I totally can, I would go further. I would absolutely go further.
Right.
Imagine if you were dying of thirst and they kept moving the water further. You would go further and further and further to get it. And that's exactly, honestly, the way I feel about sex.
Great analogy. Shauna, what's
up?
Hi.
He loves me tonight.
I've been listening to you lately, and I really like showing what you're doing. But I have a question. Like, I'm, like, really depressed right now. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's not because of, like, grades or any of that, because I've got really good grades because my parents just, like, push me like that. And I'm in sports, but I feel really bad because I can't get a boyfriend.
You're 14. Why do you want a boyfriend so badly at such a young age?
Well, I don't know. Like, all my friends are, like, having boyfriends, and, like, I don't know. It's really bad because a lot of my friends have already had sex. And I'm doing a lot of
See, that's bad, right? They're going to have more consequences from that than you not having a boyfriend.
Well, I know, but I feel, like, really alone. And I don't know how I can get past this depression. Like, I don't feel like this.
First of all, you're the most articulate 14-year-old I've ever spoken to.
Yes, it's true.
But, like we were talking earlier, though, I think having a boyfriend and being sexually active like your friends at 14 leads to needing to have more and more experience with more and more people, and it really takes the importance off intimacy. And it took me forever to learn this, that, you know, 3 chicks in a night. It sounded like the greatest thing ever until I had intimate sex with someone I loved, and it was a far better experience. I know at 14 you're never going to believe that, but it's completely true. Mm-hmm. Now to your boyfriend problem.
She's just dismissing it. What's intimacy, Danny?
Okay, here's the thing.
She's sort of stuck.
here's the thing I would recommend then. This is very important. That if you want a boyfriend, and there's lots of ways to get one, whatever you do, you should make a promise to yourself right now not to change. It's wonderful that you're good in school and in sports. Right. And if you think hanging out with the dumber crowd, the smoking pot crowd, whatever it is, will get you a boyfriend, it's so not worth it. Hang in and wait for the guy who digs smart chicks.
See, I actually already do.
Hang out with the good
stupid
people.
Crowd?
What?
Who do you hang out with?
Well, like, okay, because I just moved here, like, 2 years ago. And so, like, first I was hanging out with, like, this really, like, weird crowd. And then I got into, like, this punk crowd. And, like, we all smoke and drink and just, like, party, basically. But, like, nothing's making me happy, ever. Like nothing's making me feel good.
1, 2, 3, disaster.
Yeah.
This is big trouble, man.
Yeah, well, just having moved at 12 can make somebody your age depressed. You may be biologically prone to depression, and that might be affecting how you feel about yourself and your need for a boyfriend, and making you literally, because of your mood state, making you feel lonely rather than the loneliness making you depressed.
And is it true, so, Dr. Drew, that a high percentage of clinically depressed people are over above average intelligence?
It fits my clinical experience. I have not seen that documented, but that makes sense. That
I've seen it
certainly.
Written.
Well, and certainly people that have been, highly driven, particularly at your age, have more incidence of depressions because your parents really may focus too much on things that are not as emotionally impactful for you. They're just focused on you, the outcome, that you do good, you go to college, rather than supporting your emotional needs as you grow up. And here's the deal. I'm much more concerned with your mood than I am with the boyfriend. And the drinking and the smoking pot and all that stuff is going to make the mood even worse. And I would suggest, John, maybe you talk to somebody at school, maybe a school counselor or something like that, because the feeling you're in is not going to get solved by a boyfriend. I know it seems like that's the solution, but it isn't. And if you through this and start to sort of get that depression managed, all these things that seem so important to you now will not seem so important.
Yeah.
I can't say that strongly enough.
None of it is worth a C and D average for a very bright girl. I will tell you. And this happened. This is one of those things that, like, you'll have to wait to grow up, and so it doesn't mean anything to you right now. I will tell you right now, there is nothing hotter than a smart girl or a smart woman, because they picked you. And when a smart girl to a grown-up can have everything. She can be a lawyer, a doctor, but she picked you. It men really like it.
Yes. She needs some, I'm pouring
my heart out to this little girl.
No, I'm listening. I really am.
Is somebody in the room with you or something?
No.
Your mom just walk in?
No.
Do you think you're depressed because you're modeling, or modeling because you're depressed?
No, I think so. Like, the word I'm thinking is, like, alone. Like, okay, I talk to my friends, and I tell them how I feel, but it's like they just blow me off. Like, they don't want to listen to what I have to say. And then my parents, I can't talk to them about this. They don't know that I do any of this.
I know.
And so I'd get in huge trouble and probably grounded for, like, the rest of my life and, like, bars and chains and, like, never be able to leave my room.
Where do you do all this stuff, this bad stuff?
Well, I don't do it all the time. I just
Where do you do it?
Where?
At my friend's house. Mm.
I hate this friend. You're grounded.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. Because you want to make, and I really believe that these problems are hard, because I'm going through something now with my wife that theoretically should not be hard, yet it breaks my heart.
What do you mean?
The fact of the matter is that you're not alone. I can't believe I'm listening to that sentence. I tell my friends how alone I am. I tell my parents. I got no friends, and I got me no parents. Well, I got parents, but I got my mom, and they've been divorced since I was a kid. You've got a really nice social order around you.
Yeah, and that's really what, again, she's kind of the wrong kinds of friends, but she does have people she connects with, and that's what concerns me. This is all, she doesn't understand that she believes that she's feeling because of the circumstance, when the fact is she's feeling the way she's feeling because of her mood. She's very depressed, and that needs to be dealt with. Danny Bonaducci in here with us tonight. He survived to join us another day, and I'm very happy about that. And I can't wait to see the new the car wreck into a train wreck with a burning baby, which is amazing. All right, the phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Love Line, we'll be right back.
Here we go. More Love Line coming up. 1-800-LOVE-191. Danny Bonaducci in with us tonight. Season 2 of Breaking Bonaducci.
Coming up.
Coming up.
We haven't even finished it. We're like dead in the middle of it.
Really?
Yeah.
How's it going to wrap up? How's it going to end?
I don't know. I'm guessing it will end badly.
you haven't been filming that long, have you?
No, about a month.
Wow. And they come most days or every day? Or?
No, most days, you know, because it's one of the realest reality shows I think there is. So we don't do a lot of stuff we weren't going to do because, you know, you can count on when I'm doing something I am going to do that it turned into something I planned not to do, and that's worth filming. And then everybody has a break because we don't have to shoot the next day because anyone's crazy.
Would it even be a show if you didn't do that, though?
I don't know. I said to the doctor the other day, the show doesn't start. It has Gretchen and I in counseling together. And this guy, and then we have it separately, and he said to me, I want to help you to make healthy choices. And I looked at this guy and I said, buddy, you are not back here with a job for season two because I make healthy choices. You're back here because I make really bad choices. If I make good choices, why do we need a doctor? And he agreed with me. He goes, that's totally true. I agree. And then he set up the whole personal boundary thing about his personal safety. It's like, I'm trying to be good.
Personal safety?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's a big man. He's got some serious guns on him. He hits the gym. And I just, why don't you just get up and make your own boundaries? Why don't you take your boundaries from me, bitch? And that did not go over well. But apparently makes very good TV.
And so were you threatening the guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For what?
I don't know. I don't really remember. He said, I don't know. He's a smug doc. He's a PhD. On PhDs.
Yeah.
I don't like, you know what? If the government does not trust you to write a prescription for drugs, you are not a doctor.
Well, were you saying stuff like that to him?
Hell yes. I said, your PhD, you're like a massage therapist or a feng shui artist.
Oh, my God.
And then I end everything with bitch. Everything.
How do you know you don't remember this?
Oh, no, I remember this. I had one of my freakouts in his office and one of my freakouts in a hotel room in Boston. Wow. I'm not really clear on them.
Wow.
Something went really wrong after I won the Hasty Pudding Award.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you know I'm the Harvard Man of the Year?
Really?
Yeah. I've got an honorary professorship. I've got the pudding cup.
Was that at Harvard?
Yeah. That's why I was in Boston.
Was there a big ceremony? Well, yeah, I thought you were doing a Stern or something, too. You were in New York,
weren't
you?
No. Uh-uh. Yeah, I was doing that for sure. I was doing a show.
And then you received an award at Harvard?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, how exciting.
Now, this is kind of interesting.
I would have gone back to see that. I wish I'd known about this.
they didn't like the, not the dean, I guess the president of the school. He's like real standoffish. He wouldn't come meet me, which I didn't even know. How the hell would I know?
He just basically lost his job.
The day after I hassled him. We went to his house with the guys from the National Lampoon crew and my camera crew, and we went to his house. And I demanded to meet him because he wouldn't shake my hand. And he got kicked out or fired the next day.
Oh, my God. Well there's some kind of an association there. I'm not sure it's causative, but there's an association there.
Yeah, I'd like to take credit for it, but I feel that he was going to go anyway.
All right, Katie, what's up? You're on with Danny Bonaducci.
And Dr. D.
I had a quick question for you. I was kind of friends with this guy for about 6 months, and we were dating but with no title. And, it got more and more flirtatious as we got drunk together. Because we go to the same school, we have the same class and stuff like that. And when we were drunk, he would tell me how much he loved me and all this stuff, and he would kiss me and things. And then as soon as he's sober, he's like, I don't remember. And then as soon as we actually hooked up, messed around or whatever, he fell asleep while I was giving him oral. And now he won't talk to me. So I don't know if it was something I did or if it's him.
Okay, first of all, you have the worst oral ever. Okay, let's get that straight right now. Okay, it's the worst ever. Which, by the way, is fully acceptable to me. I give a really good one. I give these girls, I give a really good one. I really good one. That presupposes there's such a thing as a bad one.
Right.
If you live through it, it's a good one.
Right.
Well, we hooked up when we were drunk, and the thing was, I knew he had a lot to drink that night, but I know I've never gotten complaints on oral before.
Yeah.
Well, was he drunk when that happened?
When we were
When he fell asleep?
Yeah.
Okay, then I wouldn't kill myself over it. It's funny, though. You're talking to a blackout drunk for the last decade, a full-blown blackout drunk, and I'm calling crap on this guy not remembering. What happens is he's saying whatever he's saying to get you in bed, and when it doesn't work out or he doesn't want to be embarrassed, he says, I don't remember. I do it all the time or did it all the time. I would take the fact that I had a blackout a year ago, and I'd black out everything I didn't want to deal with.
Right.
Interesting. But Katie, the one thing you can say about this guy, excuse the drinking, excuse everything else, he's just not that into it. And yeah. I think you ought to keep your distance. If he were even moderately into it, you'd know it. And he is just kind of biding his time. He's, you know, enjoying spending time with you and stuff, but he ain't into it. So move on, okay?
Thank you. Right.
Sorry about that. But
no, you're right, Dr. Drew. That guy, you're never going to be that guy's girlfriend.
Right. And there's a reason that your relationship doesn't have a title, and there's a reason he fell asleep when you're trying to have oral sex. Jessica, what's up there?
Oh, that's me.
Hi, Jessica.
My friends are really big tweakers, and I hang out with them, and they're not trying to pressure me to do it, but, like, they've asked me a couple of times, and I kept on, like, refusing it because I really don't know what it is and what it does to you. Mm-hmm. So what is like, what
you're
is
talking it? To the right team.
You have a couple of experts, each from a different angle.
I'm
go
different
ahead,
angle. Doc, you want to start? Okay, I will. Yeah. Here's what I know about tweakers, and I don't mean the methamphetamines and what it's done, although to make it, you do dissolve a tin can into it, into the vat. Yeah, it's not good. It's the worst, not the worst drug ever. I still stand by crack, although I've never done meth. I'll tell you this. I go to certain kinds of meetings. You know what I'm talking about? I'm with the 12-step program, and you want to see the ugliest, dirtiest, nastiest habit ever. Talk to the tweakers. Talk to the tweakers that quit, and they still get to show you their giant scars from all their abscesses. It's just nasty.
And by the way, their abscesses come from picking at their own skin. Everyone that does amphetamine develops paranoias, and they start to get these delusional preoccupation that there are bugs in their skin or glass.
Why is it always bugs? Because I did the bug thing.
I know. They'll pick at the skin until they cause huge craters. It actually damages brains. You end up with permanent memory problems and permanent mood disorder. So, and go look at the – I'm so surprised that in a day when so much is being spoken of in the media about how horrendous methamphetamine is, that you would even consider it. It's just amazing to me.
Okay. I gotta tell you that I knew how bad every drug I ever took for me was before I took it, and took it anyway. It's not...
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Nobody ever said. But you know what? I also knew that driving my motorcycle, not this particular time, but on several occasions, 165 miles an hour. I knew well in advance. That's a bad call on the Ventura Freeway.
Yeah.
You know, and I did it anyway. And I did every single drug when they said, here's your brain on drugs. Cool. Let me get some bacon and eggs and some crack right now. So I don't think they would know it's a bad thing is going
to
work.
I'm with you. Was there any thought process in that, or was just I need to do? You know what I mean? Was just a response to drive?
The bike thing?
No, any of these thrill things. I will tell you,
Philadelphia, when I was a huge crackhead in Philly, and I'd gone to Philly to clean up, and I was there like 6 months, and I finally left my mom's basement, and I'm driving her car, and I got lost, and I ended up in the projects. The next time I was on the freeway going downtown, I knew where they were. They were at 13th Street. And I thought, and I actually said, don't go, all the way up to the first dealer I met.
Yeah.
It takes you, and that's all there is to it. You step over that line, young lady, and there's no coming back, at least the way you were.
Right. That's well said.
Thanks,
okay,
sir.
This is now Gerard.
Yes.
Hey, Gerard, what's happening? You're with Danny Bonaducci.
Hey, man.
What's going on, Danny?
How's it going, buddy?
Let me just give you a kind of setup. I'm a virgin, a 21-year-old virgin.
Right.
Never really had any sexual activity.
Cool. Hey, hang on a second, Gerard. Danny, he's from Massachusetts. Are you from Boston?
Yeah, I was right there.
I'm from Billerica.
Well, it's close enough to Harvard.
Oh, right. Hey, actually, originally from Everett, so.
Really? Yeah, I was in there the other day getting the Hasty Pudding Award. Just, you know, stopping by. So what is your thing? You're a 21-year-old virgin. Is that by your own volition or no?
Do you
choose to be a virgin?
I was insecure.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
For about a year now, I've been getting these like dry patches on my penis.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know what they are. I have a skin disease, lichen planus.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah. No, I know. The lichen planus are these purplish patches that appear on your skin, and then a white patch.
Called?
In you.
How do you call it?
Lichen planus, and then you get these lace-like. You get a lace-like pattern in the cheek inside your mouth. That's sort of classic lichen planus, but you know, it's probably just eczema on the penis. I mean, the skin of the penis is delicate, and you get any skin condition there that you can get anywhere else. Plus,
yeah,
more.
But you think if he's a 21-year-old virgin, that thing has got to be well lotioned.
It's it is not an STD. So, and they usually, you know, I have a dermatologist look at it. You can get psoriasis down there too, but these things are really easily treatable and not anything to be too particularly concerned about. It may be part of the lichen planus too. All right, Cindy, what's going on?
Hi. I was wondering if there's any way that me and my girlfriend can spice things up in the bedroom.
Danny?
Well, first of all, how old are you?
20.
20, okay. I would suggest, personally, are you both fully gay or just like each other?
No, we're lesbian.
Oh, because I was going to suggest a man, one of your friends. That would spice things up.
How could a lesbian, two lesbians, be asking two guys what to do for each other? It makes no sense.
Listen, the thing is, we don't get hot by men. We get hot by girls, but the thing is, we're not getting hot by each other.
Why not?
That's a huge problem.
Yeah, why not?
Huh?
God, you're right. I'm suddenly turned off, too.
I'll tell you this. There's a thing in the lesbian world, and I'm assuming you've heard of it, but maybe not, called the sister syndrome. You ever heard of that?
No.
What
Danny,
happens?
I'm so glad you brought this up, because people, I'm the one that always talks about this. People claim it's not true, but go ahead. You tell them about it.
Dude, you got to read some books. Hang with me in the doc. The sister syndrome, what happens is you become best friends, and you talk about clothes, and you talk about this, and you talk about other chicks, but what you don't do is sleep together anymore. You become essentially really friendly roommates.
We've never, like, been turned on by each other, like, when we're nude, you know?
We're the only romantic hotel.
Like, we say nice things that get each other turned on.
No, we get it, Cindy. That's what Danny's telling you, is that there's a well-kept secret, sort of, not amongst lesbians, but to the external world from lesbian community, which is that...
She's the only lesbian I've ever met.
Okay.
Oh, well, that changes everything.
Yeah, throw a monkey wrench in the whole sister syndrome.
No, that there's a well-kept secret that lesbians frequently stop having sex. That physical sex is not an important part of many lesbian relationships. Some it is.
Imagine how wasted Portia de Rossi is on Ellen DeGeneres.
But it's very, very important to us.
That what?
Ellen
sex
DeGeneres?
To have sex.
And yet you're not aroused, so why would that be important to you?
Because they think it's mandatory.
Right.
We want to get, you know, hot by each other, but we can't, you know?
We get hot by other women, though.
I thought that. You do get hot by other women, right?
Yes, we get hot by other women.
Then you know what you want to do? You want to hang real close and get yourself some other women, because your relationship seems so damaged anyway. Because a threesome goes wrong every time. Every time it crashes the relationship. But in my opinion, it does. This relationship has already crashed.
Like, I feel like I was cheating on her and stuff.
All kinds of feelings you can't anticipate come out during a threesome, and it ruins the relationship almost always. But very nearly. Very
and
nearly.
I will say 100% if you really know the other person well. If it's your neighbor, your cousin.
Oh, oof. Hey, Cindy, have you always had trouble with closeness in relationships? Both of you?
Well, not really. I've only been in love with one girl, and that's my girlfriend. Right here.
You're in love with any boys ever?
Huh?
Jeez. Oh, God. Have you ever been with any boys?
Not really.
You know, I'm looking.
Just a boy. He was my first kiss. But.
Danny, my crystal ball is starting to heat up here a little bit. I'm not
really
liking what I'm seeing. Yeah, yeah. Cindy, what's the deal here? Are you on any medication or anything?
No.
Think about that.
Do you come from a very sort of chaotic family system?
Oh.
My sister was lesbian, and my mom didn't like that, so they got in a lot of fights.
Were you sexually abused yourself?
No.
Were you physically abused?
No.
All right.
I'm sorry?
What's that?
My girlfriend was sexually abused.
Okay, so she... Yeah, so she has some heavy, heavy issues of trauma that's going to make it difficult for her to be sexual or even be in a relationship. For you, Cindy, where is your dad?
Huh?
Oh,
I'm killing myself.
don't worry, she'll do it for you. With one of those, just goes right through you. Pow, you'll turn to a pillar of salt. Where is your dad?
Where's my bourbon?
My dad's homeless.
Homeless, okay.
Where's my bourbon?
Was he an addict alcoholic?
I think so. Like, I was really little. Like, my mom never talked to me about it.
Did he do anything to you while you were, when he was around?
No.
Do you know where he keeps his refrigerator box?
All right.
Do you know where he is?
No, I don't know where he is. I think he's somewhere down in Tucson.
All right. Well, that kind of narrows it down
a bit. That's where I'd go.
Yeah. Cindy, here's the deal. You want a very quick and easy answer for something that's actually very complex. By, you know, taking a Kama Sutra book is not going to help your relationship.
I tried that in a bad relationship.
Your girlfriend has a traumatic relationship, a serious trauma history that's going to need to be treated. Cindy, just talking to you, and I've been traumatized that you and you come from a family system that is very disrupted, and God only knows what your dad did before he left. I'm sure if you talk to your mom, you'll find that something horrific was going on in that family, and that's made closeness and intimacy treacherous and dangerous for you as well. This is something that if you really want to get serious about, you're going to have to go get some treatment for, I'm afraid. And I'm smelling some addiction there somewhere, too, so you might want to consider a 12-step. We've got to take a break. It's 1-800-LOVE-191. Danny Bonaducci in here. Any last words, Danny?
No, I'm good, man. That was a great one.
All right, going to break.
Loveline
will be right back.
Here we go. Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Danny Bonaducci in the studio with us. And Danny, got an easy softball for you here. You ready?
I'm ready, buddy.
This is Bryce. Bryce, you're on with Danny Bonaducci.
Hey, Bryce.
Danny, yes, I've seen you on the Partridge Family.
Right. At your age? How old are you?
I'm 14. My mom has, like, every series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I was wondering if I could get an autograph from you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd be happy to. If you want to get, when we put you on hold, just give an address and I'll send it right out.
Okay.
Cool. Who do you want to mail out to, Bryce or your mom?
For me.
Okay, you got it, buddy.
Yeah.
B-R-I-C-E or B-R-Y-C-E?
B-R-Y.
You're kind of never guess that in a million years. Thanks, Doc.
There you go.
And thank you, Bryce.
All right, now this is we're speeding up the pitch a little bit here. Mary, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
We're well, thank you.
Danny Bonaducci and Dr. Drew.
Yes. Well, I've been kind of drinking a lot lately.
All right. Good call.
Yeah, I went through, I was married for 3 years and then I got divorced and then I jumped right into a relationship that ended up being very bad for me.
Right.
And just got out of that and I've just been like just drinking a lot. And I don't want to. I have 3 kids.
Oh.
I have so much anxiety and stress and just depression. I don't want to get up. I don't want to do anything.
Let me ask you something, because I don't know if you're playing in my pool or not. What is, I've been drinking a lot, mean to you in actual fluid ounces?
Well, for me, just normally I never drank till after 5. I always kind of drink beer to relax at the end of the day, but...
But what about now? Your concern is because you drink how much?
Yeah, well, I get up in the morning and I just have instant anxiety and I just don't want to deal with my day, so I'll open a beer. 10 o'clock.
Okay.
O'clock in the morning.
And Mary, just, you know, that's not anxiety. That's alcohol withdrawal. That's when that tremulousness and shakiness and shaking on the inside you feel, that's acute alcohol withdrawal. And that will progress to seizure soon.
Right. And so the liver will metabolize alcohol at the rate of approximately an hour per ounce. And some say 2 ounces per hour. If so, then what the doctor's saying is absolutely correct. Because if you go to bed wasted, you'll still wake up sober and withdrawing.
Really?
Yeah, really. Yeah. I promise.
You don't want to fall down and have a seizure in front of your kids. And if you're having a eye opener in the morning, that's time to get into the hospital, because you shouldn't be stopping on your own at that point. You're probably having 10, 14 beers a day, right?
No, I'd say about 6 or 7. But
how tall are you? A
couple Bloody Marys.
Marys on top of 6 beers? You're a drunk,
yeah, yeah,
babe.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, a lot of people call that an alcoholic, but I'm going to call you a drunk because I happen to be a drunk.
I'm fully aware that I have an alcohol problem. That's what
now,
I'm saying.
I would normally recommend, there's a certain medicine I would normally recommend, but what happens is if I recommend this and you don't take it properly or you drink on it, you'll get really sick. But I've been sober almost a year. I take something called Anabuse, and what it does is it turns alcohol to, I believe, formaldehyde. Is that right, Doc?
I think it's methanol even.
It is. I'm sorry, it's methanol. Yeah. And what happens is if you had 2 drinks fast on Anabuse, you'll be in the emergency room because you're vomiting so much.
Yeah.
But what happens, if you're not prepared to take it, you'll try drinking, and it'll make you the sickest you've ever been, and you could, in fact, die.
But the problem is Mary is in such high levels of denial about alcoholism. She, you know, I have a drinking problem, but I'm not an alcoholic, this kind of stuff. And Mary,
she thinks it's cute.
Right. I am on the record now saying that, you know, this BS about admitting the problem is 9/10 of the battle. That is BS. People today have no problem admitting the problem.
Yeah, because the problem is so readily acceptable now, socially acceptable. You're almost nobody. If you haven't been to rehab, you're a nobody in this town.
Right, and my problem is getting people to do the damn treatment, getting them to do what they need to do. That's where the struggle is today. You have to capitulate to that process. I would suggest, Mary, for free, you don't have to spend a penny. You get somebody to sit the kids tonight. You call AA. You have somebody pick you up. Do not drive because you're now driving drunk. As you're 24/7, you're drunk. So you're driving drunk whenever you're driving. And you go ahead and go sit down at an AA meeting, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth.
Yeah, shut up is the first thing because you'll be dying to talk. You'll hear these stories that remind you totally of you and you'll be dying to talk. Just be quiet and listen.
That's all you got to do. And if you need help detoxing, then you got to go into a hospital for a couple of days and do that because this is a very, very serious thing you're getting into. And this is just the beginning. And women have a five-time greater risk of cirrhosis than men. They lack an enzyme in their stomach that converts the alcohol, and as such, they get much higher levels of alcoholism alcoholic liver disease. All right, let me see here.
Wow. You know what? I got to tell you something, Doc. I've been a million doctors who are normal, like you, but they don't know. I mean, you paint a really good picture. Like, when I'm laying on the floor vomiting and sick and my head hurts for 3 days and I'm covered with sweat, it's really weird. They'll come and tell you about that, like your patients I'm sure do, but you know it like better than if you just saw it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You really had a handle on it.
Because I've been working in the field for about 15 years, and I smell it. I know it. I'm in it. And I feel it very deeply with my patients. And so as a result, I have a crazy intuition with it.
You really do.
Yeah, it's profound, and I know it very deeply. So there's no dissuading me otherwise. I know what I'm talking about with this stuff.
No,
and my physician peers, many of them are recovering guys I work with, and they all say the same thing. Like, how the hell did this happen to you? How did you understand this thing? Yeah. I'm not sure I know that'd be around a lot.
I don't know anybody else normal that gets it.
It's severe codependency, among other things, and then being around that disease all this time. We got to take another break. This one we have to actually get out on. It's 1-800-LOVE-191. Danny Bonaducci in the studio with us, and we'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. Danny Bonaducci in with us tonight. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. Give us a call. That is Danny's. Danny's here. It's Danny Bonaducci, too, which has been described as Danny.
A car crash into a train wreck with a baby on fire.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And the highlights are things that Danny can't talk about. Because he can't remember what the hell happened.
But you know they were good. If I can't remember what I did, it had to be excellent TV.
I am still kind of intrigued by the part with the psychologist. What was the premise for him being in your life, I guess, is the question.
Well, believe it or not, it was Gretchen's idea. We were going to do counseling on our own.
This is back in season one, though, right?
No, and this is in real life. Oh. And Gretchen and I were in counseling because we needed it. And by the way, that didn't pay off. although I still recommend it. And so Gretchen, when we sold the reality show, said, you know, we're in therapy and marriage counseling, forgetting the way I have treated this counselor and things I have done in this cat's office. Says, how about it starts in our counselor's office? Well, our counselor, of course, wouldn't do it because he's a real-life psychiatrist, not a PhD. But anyway, Dr. Gary was our psychologist, and he is, in fact, a very prominent psychologist. And that's how the show starts, because it was Gretchen's big-ass idea.
Uh-huh. And then he agreed to do it.
Right. And then I scared him.
And then has he been engaged in treatment with you guys above and beyond?
No.
You know what I mean? No, just for the season.
He is not our therapist, although, in fact, like I said, he's a teacher. He's written some books. He's a real-life, you know, psychologist. I don't want to put the guy down for being good at his job. I just don't personally like him. I just think he's, you know, I think he's a punk. But I think he's a good doctor. I do. I think he has my best interests at heart, and I really haven't given him the tools to work with.
I think Danny Bonaducci ought to write a book called A Million and One Little Pieces.
Very nice. Very nice.
Great idea.
I should do that. Like, I should hit the keyboard tonight. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, you know, who cares what's inside the cover? Just that the title of the cover will do it.
Oh, it's brilliant, man.
Oh, it's very interesting. Brilliant. well, anyway, I'm interested in what that whole process is about. Does he expect to be doing therapy with you guys? I mean,
yes, he does. Absolutely. He's very serious.
But is he doing motivation enhancement? Or, I mean, what's he doing?
He's doing all kinds of stuff.
Because you can't, like what? Tell me what kind of work
you're doing. Well, the first thing he does is insist that I take a drug test like every other friggin' day. Because he thinks you can't possibly be drug-free and behave the way I do.
Yeah.
So basically every other day I prove his diagnosis incorrect. You'd think he'd stop.
Right, right. Well, it's still a good idea to get regular testing if you're, you know, you're trying to maintain
every other day.
Yeah.
By the way, you know what I take? I take them at home too.
What do you do?
You just buy them. By the way, if you parents are really wondering, go to Rite Aid, go to Walmart. They have them over the counter. You just buy them in a box, and they're totally accurate. Or at least they have been for me, because I used to take them when I was dirty, to see when I could go take a real one.
Right.
And they told me every time, they're great. I'm telling you right now, if you suspect your kids on drugs and they overreact to you, they're lying.
Right. I mean, I actually believe in that. I think you might even consider sort of getting your kids used to that. You know what I mean? It's like, or when they're young, but well before they're ever doing anything, just go, yeah, this is just something I want you to be used to.
Right. Here, before and after you borrow my car.
Right. Right.
Well, I was listening to a public service announcement. It says, still to this day, the number one killer of teens is drunk driving accidents. That's
right.
That's unbearable to me. I have a preteen. Yeah. My daughter's 11 years old. Yeah. And what inoculation can I give that girl to stop from getting killed by a drunk driver or becoming a drunk driver?
No,
it
you're right.
Tears my heart. It breaks my heart. It scares me to death.
Right. And you're going to scare the F out of any guy that comes to pick her up. So they'll be all straight.
I will tell him to take a breathalyzer. I absolutely will. I'll say, you know,
a good idea.
My wife says, you know, you're going to be one of those guys with a shotgun at the door and scare you. I'll be, you know, polishing my pistol when you get back with my daughter. And I always thought I was going to be like that. But now I've been through so much. How can I hassle a girl for a normal part of life? Puberty, adolescence, dating.
Right.
So I won't be ridiculous about it. But I also won't let my daughter get hurt. Really, right. I'll be real serious about that. And I'll let them know that coming home drunk, you will suffer the same exact injuries if you were in a car crash at 35 miles an hour.
It's very interesting.
You got me all serious right there. I go all mad.
All right, let's take a call. This is Tabitha.
Hi. I was just wondering, whenever I masturbate, I get a really sharp pain on both sides.
Well, don't do it with a fork.
Is it at the time of orgasm or just at the with arousal?
Yeah. It's like right before and then during and then after.
Well, that's
and then
a shame.
It'll after about 10 minutes it'll go away.
But you still do it, right?
Sometimes.
And by the way, that's right there is somewhat of the difference between a male and a female. The male will do it until his head explodes.
Dude, if fire shot out it, I'd do it.
Right.
No, sometimes I really have to stop because it's so intense.
Yeah, Tabitha, do you have migraines?
Yeah.
You have true migraines, right?
Actually, like, I just smoke cigarettes, and it kind of makes it, like, go away, so I didn't think that was, you know, any part of it at all.
Well, that's a good idea. If you're getting a headache, you might want to give yourself lung cancer.
Have you give yourself a stroke while you're at it.
You know, I got a toothache. Hand me that jackhammer and that pistol.
Right, exactly.
Great.
Tabitha, you have, in addition to these headaches you have after orgasm, do you have migraine headaches? You answered it with a description of smoking cigarettes after a headache. You didn't say, I also have migraines.
This is a yes or no question, Tabitha. Do you have migraines?
Yes.
There you go.
And they were diagnosed by a doctor, yes or no?
Yeah, and I took some medication for it.
Hold on. And does your mother... Yes, exactly. Does your mother have migraines?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's sort of working with a psychic. Go, buddy, go.
So that's sort of typical of migraines, that they run in families like that. And do they get worse around your period and that kind of stuff?
A little bit, but not.
Okay. Do me next.
Okay. Here's the deal, Tabitha. A headache at the time of orgasm is actually a rather common problem. There is a post-orgasmic headache that is not migraine per se. And there is also exacerbation of migraine with orgasm, which it sounds like what you're getting. So you have probably pretty bad migraines, and you really do need to get on something that sort of prevents migraines so you don't keep having these. And migraines can be quite serious. They can even lead to strokes sometimes. True migraines.
He said stroke exacerbation about masturbation. I'm completely confused.
Is there anything I can do, like, in the meantime to kind of... You know, ease it up a little bit, because that would be great to have an orgasm once in a while, you know?
Yeah, I know. But why don't you use the headache medicine? What do you have, Zomeg or something? What do you have for your headaches?
You know, I stopped taking it, but it was like cyproheptadine or something like that.
Cyproheptadine, wild.
That's really
a weird one. That's a weird one for migraines.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, you ought to see another neurologist about. There are lots of different treatments available to prevent and to treat headaches, migraines particularly. The so-called triptan class, you know, which, you know, there's lots of different medicines now. I would definitely look into it. And by the way, again, it can be a serious issue and it's something that needs to be addressed. Okay? All right.
Okay, thank
you. Wow, that was so amazing when you were running down that list. You had everything. I was really, when I said, come on, do me next. And then I thought, you'd be so good at it that it wouldn't be funny at all because I've got a litany of maladies that aren't that humorous.
By the way, hey, Anderson, I need your help. My computer glitched here a second. Would you put Tabitha on hold there and call up line two? This is Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
If Anderson's listening. Drew. Hey, Jeff, what's happening?
I got a buddy of mine that's getting out of rehab in the next couple weeks. Cool. He asked me to be, I don't know if it'd be as a sponsor, what they called it exactly, but I have never done any drug, alcohol, anything in my life.
Well, you're totally unqualified. Don't do it.
Yeah, he's looking for an easy way out. He is in trouble. This is not a good sign that he'd be asking a sober normie to be his sponsor.
No, here's what you want to do. If you're that good of a friend, because you'd have to be a best friend to, you know, being someone's sponsor is up there with moving their furniture or driving to the airport at rush hour.
But
well,
you know, you'd go to meetings with him.
Sorry.
But even then, Danny, a best friend shouldn't be the sponsor.
Right.
It needs to be somebody you don't know, somebody new who's available for a new relationship.
Of the same sex, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
That seems to be a thing. But I will tell you this. What I was saying is if you're a really good friend, drag his ass to meetings and make him get a sponsor. Somebody with over a couple of years of sobriety, they'll raise their hand at most meetings. They'll say, anybody willing and able to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And then take him to anybody.
Yes.
He can find a sponsor he personally likes, and nobody ever takes offense. You can fire your sponsor at any time, and they'll never take offense as long as you're having a new one.
Right. That is great advice. Jeff, do not be his sponsor. Do not even contemplate being his sponsor, but to go to a meeting with him and haul his ass up to the front of the room and saying, I'm a newcomer. I need some help here. Anybody available for sponsorship? Take some phone numbers. Write them down for him if he's so out of it that he can't, and see to it that he calls the right people and starts working on his steps. This is Katie. What's up, Katie? This is another softball for us, Danny. It's a little break. Katie.
Hey.
I
liked this guy for maybe about 9 months now, and I just wanted to know how I can get up the courage to tell him and, like, what I should tell him. Like, how I should tell him that I like
him. What's the nature of your relationship now?
I kind of know him a little bit. I've talked to him a few times, but... I mean, we're not good friends or anything like that.
Did he give you anything that you're encouraged about? Did he give you any reason to think he might like you?
Well, a lot of my friends know, and we're friends with kind of the same people. So I don't know if he knows, but, you know,
I suggest you send in an emissary, that you send somebody in, a reconnaissance mission. That you send one of your friends in who knows him best to kind of sound him out. You know, do you have a boy? Do you have a girlfriend? Who are you interested in? I know somebody that likes you. And see where he sort of heads with that. And if it's not a complete, like, Katie's on my list, I'd love to go out with her. If it's anything sort of short of that, let it go.
Really?
Yeah, you can't change guys, especially at that age of 17.
No, absolutely
They're in or they're out. And if he's in, fantastic. You'll have a green light. Go for it. But if he's not in, don't stop it. Don't waste your time. Don't try to change him. Move on. Okay?
All right,
Katie. Good luck.
I like that. That was emphatic. That was emphatic about a point that I thought was going to go, you know, either way, kind of a blurry Monet.
No, I don't think you deal with young males. Young males, because and same thing is true with women. The women can be changed. They can be brought. They're much more flexible than men. But they got to have the door open. And they'll tell you. I mean, a lot of guys don't realize, you know, that door ain't open. It ain't open. I mean, if you like, you know, we sometimes have acted this out on the show over the years. You know, you ask a woman, you get the opportunity to talk to somebody you like, and then you go, you know, I was thinking about seeing that movie. Name a film that's out right now.
Big
Mama's House.
Transamerica.
I'm going to see Transamerica. And if she goes, you know, I was thinking about that too, and then the door's open. On the other hand, women know very clearly how to shut the door. She could just as easily go, oh, that's gross. I would never go see that film.
Right.
And then, you know, the door's shut. They have a way of kind of bringing you along, even if there's a possibility of it moving forward. Follow those cues, but when the door shuts, go to another room, turn away, go somewhere else.
My wife is kind of an involuntary revolving door. Because I'm such an ass so often. She's constantly forgiving me and then being mad at me and forgiving me and being mad at me. Right now, by the way, the door is closed.
You guys are so far in for so long. All these rules don't apply.
Right, we are so far in.
These are special set of Bonaducci rules.
It
really
is.
It's very much more complicated than the usual stuff we deal with on Loveline. It's very unique. Peace, what's up there? Peace.
Peace.
Caller who goes by Peace. Yeah, you are.
Okay, I have a question about the smell of sex. Okay, let me set up the scenario. I'm not sure exactly how to ask the question.
So far, it makes perfect sense. There is a scent to sex, absolutely.
Well, for sure. But this specifically, okay. I'm in a relationship with a man and a woman, and I spend a lot of time... What?
Just
wait a minute. I think I smell it. Yep, that's disaster.
My crystal ball is starting to smell. Like I can see some trouble ahead.
So far,
here.
It's going okay.
All right.
But okay.
Enjoy.
So I spend a lot of time with them, and they definitely have a distinct smell, you know, and it's not a bad smell or a good smell. This is a smell separate from sex.
Isn't like old people smell, is it?
No.
Okay.
It's just specifically with them. Like if I have a sweater from that, I know it's their sweater, just their
sweater. Wow. Crazy. Wow.
You guys share that, right? You know, like
no, that's
if
that's a woman's thing.
On a trip, you can go in her closet and, you know, you can smell her.
No.
You know?
No.
Are you serious?
That's a woman's thing. Men don't have very good sense of smell.
Wow. Okay.
I couldn't smell my wife if she was on fire.
Do you kind of know what I mean?
Yes, I can imagine what you mean. Okay. I've never experienced it, but I can imagine it. If I find it curious that they both smell the same.
Have you ever dated a large Armenian woman, Dr. Drill?
No, I can't say I have.
Oh, then you're not an authority on this.
But again, I can imagine it.
Okay, well, sticking with the imagination, even now I find when I'm by myself and I'm masturbating, my scent smells like them now. Like my, I don't know what I can say. My
this is either design. Obsession, the perfume, or just straight up obsession.
Okay, yeah, it's neither.
I think that you know, these are very powerful and primitive scents that are highly conditioned. And in other words, I'm suspicious that you may be either A, associating your scent with theirs, because that's usually where you get it now is when you're with them, or B, the fact of sexual arousal evokes in your primitive brain systems a memory of the scent of them. I doubt that you actually sort of become their scent. You see what I'm saying? I think this is more of a reflection of what you're experiencing than what's actually happening.
You need to take one of those Gillette plugins with you everywhere you go. Just put it in your pocket.
I know, I'm getting a little nauseated just thinking about this.
I know.
You don't think there's an actual physical change in my, I don't know, hormones or body secretions or the actual physical change through
my... anything's possible. There may be things we haven't discovered yet, but I've not heard of this and it doesn't sound right to me.
Well, I could not be more in love with my wife and I still stink exactly the way I did the day I met her.
And in spite of that, she tends to... That's not the reason she leaves.
No.
Hey, John, what's up there? You're on with Danny Bonaducci.
And, of course, Dr. Drew. Go ahead, John.
Hi. When I masturbate, when I reach orgasm, my muscles sort of clench up. They seize.
Yep.
And, it was kind of a recurring problem for about 3-4 years. Never really thought anything of it. But then I noticed my arms start to dislocate.
Oh, my God.
I went into the doctor and...
Dude, you must be great at this.
I told him everything that was happening, and he said I was suffering from hypertension. He said I tore a ligament in my right shoulder and basically said, you know, okay, well, we have to fix the ligament. I had surgery, fixed it, and I'm noticing that the same thing still happens whenever I masturbate.
All right, first of all, if you have had major surgery from a masturbation accident, you're my friggin' hero. Dude, how'd you get that scar? Masturbation accident?
Yeah, people don't really think it's that funny. Well, okay, I don't. They do.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, of course they do. Yeah. But, John, you're confusing a lot of different issues here. Hypertension means high blood pressure.
Oh.
And high blood pressure has nothing to do. He must have said something else, or you also have hypertension.
By the way, did you hear how quick I said, uh-huh?
Oh,
this is a while ago, but, you know, when I would in any way reach orgasm, whether it was masturbation or sex or whatever, my muscles used to tense, and I kind of liked it. So I was cool with it until all of a sudden both my calves would cramp so badly that it would become obtrusive. No. No, on steroids, I could climax just if the wind blew in the right direction.
Yeah, sure. And then none.
Exactly what happened.
John, I think what he said, you have a hyperextension injury, right?
Oh.
Yeah. And you hyperextended. He left out the whole story about the orgasm and the masturbating. It just means you hyperextended a muscle and of a joint, and it just ripped the tendon. So there you go.
Well, I'm not really all that physical. I mean, I don't really exercise that much. I mean, I don't know what else it could have been from, because
when I, like, I clench up and I notice that, like, every so often I'll be sore, like, the next
day.
I love when
people devise their own explanations for their medical problems. What tendon was it?
I don't know exactly which one. It was on the
bicep,
front.
Bicep tendon?
It wasn't on the bicep. It was on the shoulder itself.
Invent this stuff. I used to date an epileptic, and I just thought I was great at it. People can make that stuff up.
Seriously? What, she'd have an orgasm and a seizure?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Not every time, but often. And she'd have, this was a severe epileptic. She'd have them while driving. It was a real drag.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but when the first time she did it while we were having sex, I just went, oh, my God, yeah. And then she didn't stop. And I didn't know. And I went, oh, my God, I've killed her.
I am King Kong.
I said, I am a god, but I've killed this poor girl, and I'm probably going to have to explain this to somebody.
Michelle, what's up there?
Hi. I just wanted to say, Danny, you rock. I've got a 14-month clean myself.
God bless you.
So I just wanted to say more power to you, dude.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Drew, I have been a long-time listener, first-time caller, but I had a question. I've been married now for 2 years, and me and my husband have had troubles getting pregnant. And I can't get pregnant.
How long have you been trying?
Well, yeah.
For 2 years.
Just so you know, we never went to a doctor about it, but Gretchen and I were either actively trying or certainly not having protected sex for the first 4 years we were married until she got pregnant.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yep. Yeah. And she was a young woman. She's 26, 25 years old, I think, somewhere in there. And it took her almost till she was 30 to get pregnant.
Yeah, it can take a while.
I was wondering I heard if you get on birth control and then you stop taking it, does it increase your chances of getting pregnant?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I've ever seen. It can take a few months away from your fertility, but I don't see how it can make you more fertile or speed up the process.
The breadsticks at the Olive Garden. I swear to God, I've heard that. Have you ever heard that, Dr. Drew?
No, but
I heard the breadsticks at the Olive Garden and you'll get pregnant.
My wife is convinced it's folic acid and seaweed, so sushi is her answer. But
really?
Michelle, here's the deal. I mean, she ate sushi the night before she got pregnant with triplets, so she's decided that's it.
Wow, that's it.
It's like primitive man. It's like she said a couple incantations and pow, triplets. Therefore, those incantations work.
After triplets, I would so move over to the teriyaki chicken and be done with that.
Well, I have a friend that she's on fertility drugs, and she's been getting pregnant left and right.
Well, of course. Yes, Michelle.
The baby to term, though.
Yeah, well, Michelle, that's the way you can speed things up is you can go get a fertility. After a year of trying, if you want to have a fertility evaluation, it's reasonable. You're still quite young, so you shouldn't be in any huge hurry. But, you know, at 21, Danny and I couldn't have raised ferrets or raccoons or guinea pigs.
Still, my children would be the filthiest little children in school if I ever took them, if I didn't have the perfect wife at home.
Even to this day.
To this day.
But Michelle, Michelle, go get a fertility evaluation. I mean, there are things that need to be done. It was a sort of an X-ray of your tubes can be done, his sperm count, things to just know that everything's open and working. So, all right, I'll get out of here. All right. We got to take a break.
Was that a judgment call right there?
That's Anderson telling me to shut up. It's all right. Okay. It's good. I need to know. So, it's you know, you got to tell me. Well, quick call here first. John, what's up? John.
Hello.
Hey, you're on Danny Bonducci.
Hey, guys, what's up? Hey.
Okay, go, man.
Okay. Hey, Dr. Drew.
John. Go ahead.
All right. Guys, give me a second. Dr. Drew, did I see you on Celebrity Poker last week?
You know, they filmed that like about 2 years ago, so you might have. It was fun.
Really?
Yeah. I went
the
there.
The problem
I
is
went,
with Dr. Drew, a guy said I have two hearts, so he removed one.
Here's the problem. I went there thinking, yeah, you know, how can I do? I want to do this. Should I do this? All right, I'll go represent Gamblers Anonymous. And I went there.
Nice.
And I didn't represent anything, and I had fun, and it was an enjoyable experience. I sat with all these world class Texas Hold'em guys, and it was just a fun experience.
I got my
ass beat.
Yeah,
good stuff. All right, guys. All right. Well, have a great night.
All right, John.
All right, thanks, man. Later.
All right. Now we'll take a break.
Yeah.
All right. The phone number here is one. What?
First,
what?
Do you know who Bonaducci sounds like, Drew?
Poor man.
Hey, Drew, why is it that when you rub your balls while you're jerking off that it feels so much better?
That guy doesn't sound like me.
No, he doesn't.
It's and Pharrell, yeah.
Pharrell, there you go. Pharrell's voice. That's what it is. 1-800-LOVE-191. Danny Bonaducci in the studio. There is only one Danny Bonaducci, yeah, so to compare him with anybody is unacceptable.
Wow. What's that? You know it's me talking? There's something brilliant in your earphones.
Hey, Drew.
Okay. Okay. All right, there's Steve-O. All right, we'll be right back.
The phone number for Loveline is 1-800-LOVE-191. Loveline, I'll be right back.
Here we go for more Loveline. Danny Bonaducci in the studio. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. I'm Dr. Drew. He again is the star of Breaking Bonaducci. He is the car crash into a train wreck with the burning baby.
That's right.
Isn't that right?
That's exactly right, sir.
And this is Carrie.
Hey, Carrie.
Hi. I was calling to ask you about, for about 8 months now, I've been having a problem. I've been dating my boyfriend for about a year and a half. And I keep getting back-to-back, like a urinary tract infection, then like a yeast infection, and a case more often than not, BV. And I have basic Planned Parenthood. And I'm worried that I've never had these problems before. Like, they're normal girl problems, but I don't know how to remedy them.
All right, hold on. Have they treated him?
Yes. He went in and he got checked.
Right.
And they say that all these things are things that happen to women.
You wouldn't happen to be really skinny, are you?
No, I'm actually, I'm just a normal thick girl.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not
normal
fat.
Thick girl. I like that. I know.
I'm not a fat girl, and I'm just not skinny. I'm just kind of an average girl.
Are you guys particularly active? Are you doing things that can cause sort of pressure on the urethra and maybe pushing bacteria up into the bladder? And are you introducing foreign bodies and, you know,
that's
no,
things?
No, he's kind of large.
All right, well, there you go. And if you put enough pressure on the urethra, you'll get a urinary tract infection every time.
And ladies, I hope you're listening carefully. A small penis can be great.
It's your friend.
A small penis is your friend.
That's kind of normal. I've had that happen all my life. Ever since I was a little girl, I've been particularly common of getting a urinary tract infection. But
all right. So you said the yeast infections you can treat over the counter. That's not a big deal. And then you said you get bacterial vaginosis on top of that.
Yeah, and I just don't understand. It keeps repeating. And I've taken medication quite a few times, and they told me you keep taking it. It's something that works on your immunity system, so you shouldn't take it very often.
Well, you should be using a cream. There's a Metrogel cream. It's called a metronidazole cream, and you should be using that. Get that from Planned Parenthood, and that just use that regularly. That should take care of things.
But give your boyfriend like a heads up that you've got that you're wearing it.
Exactly, Forrest. Yeah. What's up?
You don't just want to run into that cream, man.
Forrest.
Hey, Dr. Drew, how's it going?
Hey, Forrest,
you're the
Danny
second
Bonaducci.
Forrest. I know somebody named Forrest. What are the odds of that? Very, I'm sorry, go ahead. Slim.
Very slim. Actually, Dr. Drew, I want to tell you, it's great that I can get through to you easier than I can doctors at my HMO. So great.
that's interesting. So isn't that
anyway,
interesting?
I'm having some struggles here. I had a back injury a couple of years ago. It was just recently diagnosed as degenerative disc disease, actually, by a guy who went to Hopkins. So,
But here's the deal. Most upright males have degenerative disc disease. That's what they don't tell you when they give you that diagnosis.
Yeah, well, I asked him about that, actually. And, well, it's been time and time again periods of six-month-long complete debilitation.
Let me just share with you the way to you haven't told me your story yet, but because I deal with this all the time.
Oh, I know I listen to you frequently, so I've heard the story and I fit right.
And the way to take a serious back pain to make it an overwhelming disabling problem is to get on opiates, and until you're off the opiates completely for 2 months, you cannot interpret what's going on with your back pain.
You know what? For the next 60 days, I'm going to hold your Vicodin for you.
Well, right now I'm kind of wishing I had some. So, Dr. Drew, here's the story.
Me too.
Yes. Well, after the first initial injury, they were lickety split, ready to go, put me right on the Percocet, right on.
Yeah, of course.
And I was completely smashed on Percocet for about 2 years.
Great.
They misdiagnosed me with having kidney stones. It was a whole debacle. It was really pretty much a disaster. Eventually, I managed to wean myself off of the Percocet under doctor's supervision and was clean for about 5 or 6 months.
Right.
Back pain came back, you know, way worse than it was before.
Just out of curiosity, you didn't smoke any pot, didn't drink during that five-month period?
No, I didn't, actually.
Okay.
Not at all.
Good.
I actually re-aggravated the injury. I mean, I, you know, bent over, picked up a box wrong.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
Full-on.
Got it.
Percocet's pretty serious, too.
Yeah.
That's what I was given after my bike wreck. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about, but I'm not positive yet, changing my sobriety date from that date I have tattooed on my shoulder.
Because
I took my prescriptions, you know, and that's I had major surgery. I had stitches in my arm. I'm sitting there and I've got another broken arm, broken nose. But I took the 30 Vicodin in 9 days. Is that a relapse?
And did you notice how your thinking changed during that time, too?
Yeah, I was high as a kite.
Well, not only high, but afterwards, you'll start obsessing and thinking things are good ideas that are not such good ideas, and it just activates the whole disease. So if I were you, I would. I think it's reasonable.
Ah,
you don't have to, though. It's up to your sponsor, you know, really.
I'm thinking about it.
All right. So what else? So, Forrest, how can we help?
Well, anyway, I did eventually relapse just by getting a hold of several bottles of Vicodin and Norco, and, you know, it didn't go too well. Now I'm off that, too. I have started smoking a tremendous amount of marijuana. Definitely, you know, an addict, I suppose, although I haven't been on any narcotics for about 3 months now after the relapse, after the six-month period of sobriety.
Well, you're on marijuana maintenance now.
And listen to these increments of time, 3 months here, 4 months there. You're a total, you know what, you're not a hardcore junkie, so you don't have to wear the label, but you're a drug addict. No, I don't doubt it for a second.
I have no pretenses of being anything but.
Good for you.
So anyway, the trouble is, just recently, I had another major back pain flare-up. Now, of course, I'm on alert with all the doctors, and that's good. You know, they understand the history, and so they don't want to get me back on any opiates. And my primary care physician put me on a whole bunch of gabapentin. Now, I had actually been taking gabapentin in lower doses before, of course, for bipolarity, which is another great thing to throw into the mix of addiction.
Yep. Oh, boy.
So,
what do you take for that? Do you take lithium, Lamictal, Lexapro?
Depakote. Well, I'm starting to question the original diagnosis because it never really seemed to help, or the original prescription. They have me on Paxil and 300 milligrams twice daily of gabapentin.
Okay, here's the problem with all drugs for the mind. I can just, the name of what I'm supposed to be saying eludes me. But here's the problem with if you're depressed clinically and taking medication for it, it's probably one of the few medicines, if you take it right, will convince you you don't need it because you'll feel normal and you'll go, why am I taking all these pills? And that's the easiest drugs to go off.
Well, no, I've never gone off them with Paxil, especially you start having seizures when you go off the Paxil, so that's not really an option. But once I hurt my back again, they started explaining that Neurontin is also very good for neuropathic pain, and they tripled the dose.
Yeah, Neurontin, you should be taking. Yeah, we can't go too much into this for us, but around 2,400 milligrams a day of Neurontin would be appropriate for you, both for the standpoint of opioid withdrawal and for the chronic pain syndrome. So I would be aiming for 800 milligrams for 3 to 4 times a day.
Yeah.
If you get above the 800 three times a day or 600 four times a day would really be a reasonable dose given the story you told me. But I would give NA a look-see, too, because you're trying to do this kind of on your own. Danny, you have anything to say to Forrest about that?
Well, you know, I think you'll dig NA meetings. Of course, it stands for Narcotics Anonymous, and I think you should look into it. And they're one of the more interesting groups because they get down and get funky because at some of my 12s, it's all about alcohol, and you really shouldn't mention anything else. But at NA, everything goes, and it's on a social sense. I'm telling you, as a social study, it's one of the most interesting things I've ever done, and I still do it to this day.
A lot of tats and pierces and bikes.
Yeah, oh yeah, they're a groovy crowd.
And by the way, Forrest is an interesting guy. I really like Forrest. I appreciate your openness and honesty, and you're smart, obviously. And your honesty is almost getting to where you need to be. And you are a little bit of a unique case. There's a couple things going on here. And so, you know, I don't want you to say you have to do a certain way because you've been sort of struggling along the way you have with reasonable success. But I kind of look into it. I think about maybe some NA, try to get some support in dealing with this. And again, somebody other than your HMO doctors on a radio show to reflect back up to you upon, you know, about your thinking about what's going on here. Maya, what's up there, my dear?
Hello?
Hi, Maya.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I was just, like, wondering, someone, like, told me that you can, like, get fingered and, like, pop your cherry. And, like,
Jesus.
So I don't know, because, like, I don't know. Like, one time I was just, like, doing stuff with this guy,
and he was, like, fingering me, and then I just started, like, bleeding, but I wasn't, like, on my period, and, like, I don't know, it was really weird, so I was just, like, wondering, like, if that's, like, possible.
Yes, it's quite possible. And anything introduced in there can stretch things out and tear things and stuff, and of course.
So,
how old are you?
I'm 15.
15. Getting fingered can pop your cherry.
I know, Danny loves your command of language.
That's what I was going to say. You know what? The act doesn't bother me as much as her description of it.
Oh,
what?
Maya.
Nothing. That sentence wasn't right. For you.
Just slow down. Just take it easy. Plenty of time.
I'm doing
ahead.
That now, though. I am.
All right, good. Excellent. The mission right. Accomplished. You can move along. Okay, this now is Rebecca. What's up, Rebecca?
Hi. I was on last week. I don't know if you remember me or not. So I was on when Fred Durst was on. I asked a question about a guy that I had slept with when I was really drunk, and then I continued to go over his house and spent the night like 5-6 times, and he never tried anything with me after that.
I do remember this.
Why you so fat?
No, we said something was up with him. Something was definitely up. Well, so what was the story? What happened?
Oh, you guys couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
I got it. You're sleeping with a gay guy.
No, we couldn't. It didn't make sense to us, but something. We ended up saying, we cannot figure it out, but something's up here. We just can't figure it out.
Tell me the story, and I'll take care of it.
All right, go ahead. Tell the story first to Danny. See if he can come up with the answer.
Huh?
Tell Danny the story first. See if he can come up with the right answer.
Okay. I was at this guy's house. I'd been friends with him for a while. I ended up getting, like, really drunk. I was on a couple pills. I don't know. I was just really wasted. Ooh. And I ended up sleeping with him. And then I continued to go over his house the following week, a couple days a week, spending the night and stuff. I was sleeping in his bed, and he wouldn't, like, even attempt to kiss me or do anything. But he continued to invite me over, and I didn't know.
Two possibilities here.
Well, hang on. But Phil, flush it out, Rebecca. Basically, this guy's a crack house he's running there, too.
No, he's not.
Well, yeah, everyone comes over there and does drugs with him. Well, he deals drugs, and he's got lots of people doing drugs all around him. And I said, well, maybe that's why he can't function. He's
that's quite intimate.
No. Yeah. You guys got it all wrong.
All right, so go ahead.
Does he take cocaine?
Huh?
Does he take cocaine?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I've got your answer already. There's only two possibilities here.
All right.
One is he needs you to be drunk to do it. He can't possibly do it with you when you're sober and looking in his eyes. You know, he's nervous, whatever. The second possibility, and I think this is a gimme, he doesn't like you.
To put it this way, not that into you.
Not that into you. Absolutely. That's what I mean. I didn't mean to be insensitive. He's just not that into you.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Thank you.
I ended up talking to him last night. I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to ask him because it's bothering me, you know. And
good.
He did tell me that the reason why, you know, he did like sleep with me is because like I was drunk and I was so like gung-ho about it. And afterwards, he said that he didn't know that if I would be as willing because I wasn't drunk, and he was like scared of rejection and all like this.
No. He's not that
Dr. Danny totally knocked it.
Yeah, Danny's got it. He's not that into you. That's a lot of double talk. He's not that into you.
What?
He's being nice. Well, how's it going now?
We're, like, together now.
Are you doing it now?
No.
Okay. All right, a reasonable guy would have sex with a Buick. He's just not that into you.
I don't know. Or it's drugs. Those are the two things keep cycling through my thinking. He doesn't know what he's saying because he's loaded, and that's what counts to him for him is doing drugs. And he can't quite be honest with you about anything because he's loaded.
No.
Okay, I'm telling you right now, anybody on the line who's calling and your question is, why doesn't my boyfriend want to have sex with me, or why doesn't my boyfriend want to have sex with me anymore? One of two things. One of three things. Biological, chemical, or homosexual. And that happens a lot.
Or he's not that in.
Or he's not that any of us. I couldn't think of it. I swear to God. I went, what am I saying?
Yeah, I mean, men, you know, young male, she's talking about somebody in his young 20s. I mean, they're pretty driven. It's hard to take them off the course.
Yeah.
Somebody's sleeping in the bed with somebody that he had slept with.
You know, I'm 46 years old, and if I weren't married, my criterion, of course, for having sex is she should have most of her limbs. But that is not a deal breaker.
Teeth?
Yeah, I'm okay. Either way. Although that does gross me out.
But
you mostly see it on homeless chicks, and there's also that whole odor thing going on. But yeah, you know, a healthy guy in his 20s should be totally having sex with you, whether he even likes you or not.
Well, at least he should be trying.
70% of men have had sex with a woman they actively disliked.
That's true.
That is true.
That's true. All right, we're going to take another break. That is Danny Bonaducci.
Yeah, he is, that's Dr. Drew.
He's full of information that you can only get from Danny.
Yeah, because most guys with this information are dead.
He's espousing truths that we should all be just acutely attuned to. And his show, Breaking Bonaducci 2, is underway, and I'm anxious to see it for one, because Danny got broken again.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even know what happened. And,
I hate that.
We'll all get to experience it together when it airs. Are they going to let you look at the footage before it goes to air?
I don't ever. When I freak out, I last year I never saw any footage. One of the things that made me freak out is my wife had some kind of party at a hotel room, at her 40th birthday party, I believe, and somebody hired strippers, and I got furious and flipped out, and like there were a couple minor lawsuits over it, and it was bad. And I have gone my whole life without, we're all settled. But I went my whole life without ever seeing that tape. I didn't want to see my wife with these strippers. I just didn't want to see it.
Yeah.
Well, Latin America buys the show, 22 countries. I fly to Mexico City, and one of the things we film is me teaching these Mexican actors how to act like me, except in Spanish. And that's the tape they showed, and they showed it over and over and over.
My God.
And then the next thing I know, I just wigged out.
Oh, really? What happened?
I'm not really clear, Doc.
Oh, that was part of what
No, I was fine in Mexico City. Then I had to go to New York, and I was still good. Then I got home and was next to my wife, and she said something. And I went, "How about customers?" And that's really the last thing I remember. She said, like, I thought I remembered it until she started saying things I had done, like talking to people I shouldn't have talked to on the phone and calling them up and saying, "How could you let this person do this?" And I don't remember that at all, all.
When you get this out of control, do you ever beat your wife?
No, I've never.
You don't know what's going on.
Well, she looks unbeaten when I come out of it.
Here's the other deal.
People that I beat, you can tell they've been beaten.
He'd use drugs before he'd beat his wife, in my opinion. And really, because in an out-of-it state, that's where you'd go. You'd go to do drugs. And I don't know why. I can't. It's but for the grace of God that you haven't. So I'm just
I certainly will. Well, probably because I think she'd kick my ass. You've met her.
Yeah, she would kick your ass.
Yeah.
In one of those states, if you don't know what you're doing, you know, who knows? So
that's right here. But, you know, thank God I've never crashed my car while wasted. I've never gotten a drunk driving ticket, and I've never raised a hand to a woman. It's most certainly.
All right. Phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. That is Danny Bonaducci. We're going to take a little break. Be right back.
This is Loveline.
Loveline will be right back.
Everybody, this is Loveline. I'm Dr. Drew. He is Danny Bonaducci. The phone number, once again, is 1-800-LOVE-191. This now is John. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. It's good, man.
Well, recently I got a job at a place where I deliver blood around town. And just the last couple of weeks, I've been having just dreams off and on of me and a friend or me and my girlfriend magically finding one of these units of blood in my pocket, cutting them open and drinking them, kind of like, and then hallucinating on them and having this crazy trip. At first, it was kind of like a weird dream, but the more it happened, it kind of got to me, kind of weirded me out. Just last week, I was looking at these units and I kind of found myself not really like wanting to just bust them out and open them and drink them, but kind of intrigued, kind of like I wouldn't mind trying that, kind of interested in it, kind of wondering. I don't know, kind of wondering what it would do to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's just like a stress work. I just don't know what it is. And it's just kind of freaking me out a little bit. But at the same time, it also intrigued me.
What do you think, Danny?
I think he's curious. I think that's what it is. I think he's been driving around with this blood. That would freak me out. If you were an organ guy that delivered organs and stuff, that'd be one thing. But there's so much of this blood. You think some could go missing. You wonder what it tastes like. You've been fantasizing in your car, and you've worked yourself all up. But basically, you're a curious young man, and your curiosity has killed your cat.
Do you think it's some sort of primitive, leftover, God knows what kind of animalistic impulse, and that's just sort of arousing in some weird way, some very, very, very primitive way, and he ought to just let it go?
I think he ought to just let it go.
Yes, to let it go. I mean, he might think about flinging his poo or something, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's on that level.
I've done some funky stuff like that. The guy next to me, when I used to live on my boat, we called him the shark guy. He'd always come back with these giant sharks, and I walked over to see his latest shark just as he was opening it up, and he said, any real man on their first catch or some such thing eats the heart. And I pulled out this heart out of a giant shark, which is surprisingly warm, by the way, and took this big bite like it was an apple. And he goes, I was just kidding, man.
Wow.
I thought I was being off top and freaked out my neighbor.
That's has he spoken to you since?
No, because I was also a full-on drug addict when I lived on my boat, and I stole a bunch of stuff from him.
Nice. Well done. Sky, what's up there?
Hi. My question is, why do guys cheat when they tell you they love you and they want to be with you and blah, 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 blah?
Because they're okay. Boys.
Well, no. Here, Danny, you need to give her a little lesson on the mail.
Right.
Come on.
I will, because
there's no way they can go. There's no way women can go to get information that's actually sort of really accurate about men.
I will do my best, but like I was saying about Dr. Drew, he's the only normie I ever knew that really got what's going on in a drug addict and alcoholic's head and the pain they're kind of going through. So it's very difficult to tell a young lady a total truth about men because they won't believe it. Here's the truth. You can be the most in love, dedicated, loving husband, father, boyfriend, fiancé, and sleep with other women without believing you are damaging your relationship in any way. What she doesn't know won't hurt her.
Yeah.
I've lived that way, unfortunately, for a very long time, and finally you find out it does hurt them, and it's a rather traumatic moment. But I am telling you, this has, especially your age, has very little to do with you.
Right.
Yeah. I wouldn't say he was more than flirting. He was like, I caught him on the base. He's in the military. And I caught him
Sky,
on base
Sky,
with,
Sky,
like,
here's the deal.
With
Sky,
I know. His back and shit. Sorry.
All right, Sky. Oh. Anderson, can I keep talking to her? Anderson?
If you like.
All right.
Yes,
I think she needs to listen. Listen.
Well done. Sky, here's the deal. At your age, there's two common sort of situations.
Mm-hmm.
One is two issues, really, that are sort of pertinent to your age. Let's put it that way. One is that guys will tell you anything to get you into bed.
Anything.
So there is that. Sometimes they'll even believe it because they're so driven by what they're trying to do and they're so overcome by their biology that they really can't even tell sometimes when they're being honest or dishonest. So that's number one.
Okay.
And number two, you're picking these guys. And you're picking guys that there's a range of sort of male behavior. They're not all complete just pricks.
Yeah, well, this is my first guy that's ever cheated on me.
I understand, but you're still picking the guy. And if you really have some backbone here, just dump him. That's it. He's cheating on you. He will not be honest with you. He's out. Got to take another break here, believe it or not. Danny, isn't that fast?
That is phone fast. Number, the show flies by.
I know. It's been a good show, too. I appreciate you coming in here. We're going to take a quick break. Be right back.
If you need help,
call Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Well, that about does it for another episode.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I'm so glad you came in, Danny. Please, you're welcome anytime. And you
absolutely, my pleasure.
A dear, with many more dears to come, friend
good.
Of the show. Good
thank
luck
you.
On the second season. I'm dying to see it, and I hope I get a chance to view it before you do, just so
the
I know what to prepare for.
The problem is I'm dying to make it, and that seems to be the problem.
Yes, that will make me very unhappy if you, in fact, do finally do yourself asunder.
Nice ending, though. It's a nice ending.
Don't do it. I swear to God.
The difference between me and James Dean, a few years and planning.
You're beginning to scare me. Only recently. I was never truly frightened by you. Now I'm starting to get a little scared. I know that, but I'm worried about what you're going to do yourself. That is Danny Bonaducci. The show is Breaking Bonaducci. There's a second season underway. I've been tantalized by what's up and coming. And until I see you next time, this is Dr. Drew saying goodnight and stay well.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Annie Gold. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.